Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right, this show brought to you in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. Just go to simplisafe.com/Adam, get all the sensors you need, all the help you need as well to set it up. Custom systems going to show up post-haste at simplisafe.com/Adam. Well, in the first half, we found my long-lost, horrible Acme comedy review. A couple bright spots for me. We'll do trending topics. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
If aliens showed up on your doorstep tomorrow and they asked, "Give us something to drink," what alcoholic beverage would you give them? On the Fred Minnick Show, Vampire Diary star Ian Somerhalder joins me to talk about aliens and what we would drink with them. We're also sipping some really rare bourbon from the 1940s. Tune in to however you get your podcast. Listen to this episode to hear the greatest celebrity palate I have ever tasted with Ian Somerhalder. Here's a hint.
It's almost like oak that's been soaked in maple syrup.
Don't miss this episode. Download the Fred Minnick Show today. Cheers.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian Brendan Schaub. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Chris Loxamana drops by for some trending topics. And now, this intro joke should have aired yesterday, but it got stuck at the United Gate. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate. She get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
I just collect the motherfucking checks and do my job.
Well.
Love her.
I did find our Two Roads Player Acme Theater review.
Oh, good.
Which will be comical and for a few different reasons. Also, we got a new Rich Banks song already about Mike August and his missed flight.
Oh, good.
So I think we should get out of the gate with that, Dawson and Chris, and then we'll get on to many other subjects.
Please, Mr. Tambourine.
I got a YouTube strike.
Oh, my.
So I'm in YouTube jail right now. Something said, I don't know if they tell you specifically what you said, but it was some misinformation about COVID.
Oh, mazel tov.
Yes, which just means I'm right. All right, let's get out of the gate with our new Rich Banks song.
Fine, if you've got some fucking regulation or protocol or time, whatever the fuck it is that says I can't get on the plane even though I'm there, then why don't you fucking explain it to me? So I'm just left there going, ready to strangle somebody.
August, shake a tail feather. The plane doors are closing, no flight delay for weather. Loxy and Adam are in the cabin, LA bound. You're gonna hear the plane leave while you're still on the ground. But United decided to close the gate, and August so freaked out. Let me on the jet.
God damn it.
Oh, the security line fucked him over. He needed TSA pre. He's gonna blow a fuse in his brother's shoes with a bag of hotel TP. Oh, let me on the jet.
I mean, we are just all a bunch of fucking cows to them, and if the cow gets away from the herd, well, that cow can fucking die. What do we care? I get paid the same whether everybody gets on that plane or not. So I'm not extending myself one inch.
Hey, guys, we're all in this together. Ace Man woke up late, but we're finally in the Uber. It's gonna be alright, we got TSA pre. Well, it worked for Ace and Chris, it didn't work for me. They say, where is Mike? We ain't seen him yet. Oh, but he's so damn close. La la la, let me on the jet.
What the fuck is wrong with these people?
He just made it through security. The intercom screams out his name. He says United sucks. I paid buku bucks to get my first class seat. La la la, let me on the jet.
Here I am. You can put me on a plane. And he's like, huh?
I guess, Mr.
And that's on you, fucking United. You're some of your employees literally should be exited from the building because they are fucking assholes.
Wow, Rich Banks with, of course, Mike Lynch and Dawson on the lyrics as well.
That's the most I've enjoyed that song, the original one.
That's
years.
Right. And such a fast turnaround.
Yeah, well
so,
done.
So timely, so topical. All right, so there's that, and then there's the... found the LA Weekly review, which was in a book I wrote. I knew it was in one of the books somewhere. So I think Chris got hold of Lynch, maybe, and Lynch found it. All right, now you have to let me set the table. We were at the Two Roads Theater, directly across the street from Vitello's. Mm-hmm. Met there originally when I was booted from the Groundlings. I was not a Groundling.
You didn't have what it takes.
Did not have what it takes to be a Groundling. I got all the way through the school, never made the Sunday show. And the story behind that is kind of interesting, which is you do two shows. The two shows, are you get into advanced. And when you go basic, intermediate, writer's lab, advanced, two shows in the advanced class, and then the following day after the second show, they vote. And then you're either in or you're out. And if you're out, you could take advanced again, but back then there was probably a year, maybe even 18 months in between classes. And then all you would do is take it again, and they would vote again. And at this point, they're going to have to vote in the person they didn't think was worth making it the first time, which is... it seemed statistically kind of low for me. And I didn't have that kind of time. I was, you know, 27, and it just seemed like a year and a half is a pretty long time when you're young. So I was rejected and dejected. And I went back to my no-bedroom apartment, my single or bachelor, whatever, wherever my stripper girlfriend was living. And we were living in Hollywood off of Franklin.
The Efficiency, aptly named.
Yes, that's where I decided to put the kill switch on my fuel pump and spray paint my radio because it was going to be parked out in Hollywood. By the way, Hollywood was dicey then it got nice, and then
and
it got dice.
We're back.
Now we're back to dice.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can do it if we are motivated. But she, back then, felt bad for me and was looking through the drama log and found an ad for the Two Roads Players or some upstart comedy troupe that was forming at the Two Roads Theater, not too far of the hill, and like kind of Toluca Lake. I was in Hollywood, circled the date, and I just showed up after answering the ad in the paper. And then those were the original seven or nine people that comprised Acme back then, because it was an element of... well, we showed up.
Right.
We're legacies. Here. We're grandfathered. You can't boot me out. I'm here on the first day.
Yeah.
So made up of a lot of folks who were mainly Groundling rejects, but we able to sort of cobble together some sort of – we basically
– your expansion team.
Yeah,
we knocked off the Groundlings. We just sort of did all the stuff that they would do and put it all together that way. And
was there anyone that showed up and was like, hey, fellas, what are we doing? What's an improv?
No, it was all beleaguered people that had been chewed up and spit out of the system.
Right.
Some of them were from
I.O. Second City.
Yeah, I don't think there was Second City back then out here. But
only one city.
There was a place on Ventura Boulevard in sort of Studio City.
You already lost Brian. Talk to me.
Called like Comedy Works or the Comedy
Connection.
The Comedy Connection.
Dang. I think it was.
And they'd all been kind of chewed up and spat out by the Comedy Connection. So it was just this ragtag of mercenaries that have been pushed, deemed unfit and unfunny enough to be in these mainstream groups.
So Suicide Squad.
Yes, we would go start our own group. And so we did. And, I could tell some people were funny and had chops and made some friends over there. And a lot of the people moved on. You know, later on, people like Alex Bornstein showed up and folks that you've heard of.
I'll pay that.
Yeah, but that was down the road.
Right.
This was just nobody back at the very beginning. And like I said, we started doing shows. Nobody showed up. We'd gone across the street to Vitello's, handed out flyers. Nobody walked across the street and watched our shows.
As modestly as you can, when you sized people up those first one or two meetings, get-togethers, could you tell where you ranked in the hierarchy? Were you one of the better ones, or what was the talent level? Where would you have batted in the lineup?
Well, I had this.
You can tell when you. It doesn't take long in an improv class to tell. No. Right.
I couldn't spell or type or cold read, so I was at a deficit in terms of creating scripts and sketches, and I was at a real deficit when someone would hand out, because they go, all right, you're going to play the school principal, and they'd hand me the script, and they go, all right, let's put it up, let's check it out, and I'd be, because everyone was college educated and pretty bright. It attracts a very bright group of people with big vocabularies and able to type and spell. I was...
Play to the top of your intelligence. I am!
I couldn't really act, and I didn't do characters.
Okay.
Strike eight.
Enough said.
Other than that.
How'd you enjoy the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Cock of the walk over there.
You were like Shaq, no free throws.
No,
his assist going to be 1.5 a game.
But I was probably funnier than everybody.
Okay.
I had the funny genes, so I had this thing of being like, everyone else had trained in the sport, read the rule book, and understood the strategy of the game very well. I was just crazily athletic with no experience in the sport we were playing. But I had the athleticism as a metaphor. I was funny, And so there's a little steep learning curve, and I was ready to take it on. I was going to try to do some characters. I was going to try to learn. I would have to get together with people and write, and they would type and I would write. And that's where Paul Rugg, who ended up in Animaniacs and doing all the voices and all these other various guys, ended up there. And that's when M.D. Sweeney, the director, it was shortly after that when I said to him, what do you think for me, are we talking sitcoms? Is it SNL? Is it writing? Is it like behind the scenes? Like, well, stand up? Like, what is it? What do you see? You've been watching me for 6 months. What? Give me your advice. Where should I go? And he just went, you need a job. He told me two things. He goes, I don't really see you as a performer. I see you as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, I can't write. I can't type. I can't spell. And he said, then later on, he just looked at me one day, probably sitting at Vitello's, and he went, you need a job where you just talk all day. Some sort of job where you just sit there and pontificate about everything all day.
Wah,
wah. And I was like, okay, that's not a job, though. That's not a where.
What was he thinking? Professor?
What do we do?
I was going to say teacher.
He was literally, he knew he was making up the job.
Yeah, he
was just
a
like,
job.
It would be great. Like,
he looks like a genius now.
It's kind of equivalent to you going to a roommate who's a chronic masturbator. You need to figure out a way to get paid for beating off. It's like, thanks. But he ended up being right with podcasting, which, of course, at that time, we were 15 to 18 years away from a podcast, or at least anyone knowing what a podcast was. So that wasn't on the table. Yeah, but I remember
personal audio.
I remember thinking, "This is he's created this job that doesn't exist for me to do." So it seems like it's going to be tough to get paid. But we then went to the Acme Theater, and the Acme Theater was a flooring place, and most places start off is carpeting or flooring places before they get converted. This building was a carpeting and flooring place before I converted it into a studio. But there was that place. It was on Lancashire. They were trying to – very beginning of – we're trying NoHo Arts District.
I was going to say, where would there be a carpeting place in NoHo?
Well, it was an industrial area that was kind of dicey, and the valley was starting to get run down, and it was a little scary. And
now it's nicey.
Yeah, right. I remember they didn't have any upscale eateries or clubs or anything. And the thing that's funny, actually, is I remember when they went and did the saw cut on the sidewalk and they started planting all these little sapling trees, which are now big, glorious trees that line the way on Lancashire. But back then, they were just, you know, had the stick with the bungee cord. And they were just, I was like, gah. And I remember looking at it as kind of a metaphor, like, I'm going to be dealing with the sapling for the decades, you know, but one day somebody will come in here and enjoy.
Now we have the NoHo West Shopping Center.
Yeah. Beautiful. So we took this place and it was just an empty storefront and it was kind of deep and the ceiling wasn't very high and it wasn't really a good place for a theater, but I designed something that was pretty simple, sort of ingenious. And me and Mark just went to work on it. And I started building all the risers and the stage and the booth and the ticket booth and the sound booth and the back and the stairs and the door and the side and the hall. And I just used all my building experience to physically build this place. I did have a recollection about this, which is I was remodeling my mom's kitchen in the house that was bulldozed because the kitchen hadn't been done since like 1952 or something. And I was doing it. Here we are. 1990 or something, and I was about halfway into my mom's kitchen remod when we got Acme, and I was like, we got to build a theater, and I got to build this theater. Yeah. I just went nuts on this theater, and my mom kept going, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. The kid, you know, they got their hot plate sitting on top of a pile of books. It's a shit zone.
To be fair to you, didn't she already have her hot plate sitting on a pile of books?
It was always a shit show at my mom's house. That's why they bulldozed it, but I was halfway into the kitchen, but anyway, finished the place. I remember we got all the seats from a closed down theater in the West Valley.
Okay.
I remember going.
Did they charge you for them? Or just
no, I don't think they did. I think somebody found some theater that was going to be like bulldozed. It was like 30 years old and they had all the folding theater seats. And I remember distinctly going, well, we can't use the ones that are up top or in the middle because the slab is raked.
Yep.
And those seats have a short back end and a long front end because of the
slant.
Yes, to accommodate the rake.
Okay.
But we do have the ones at the bottom where it flattens out.
Floor level.
So we're going to take all those floor level ones and we're going to get these things. And all the floor level ones from 20 years of soda drifting down the rake and then gathering.
Soda and God knows what.
Just gathering in the feet of this thing. It was just every nut bolt was sticky and corroded and whatever. And we're getting down there with a little socket and like under, you know, it was dark, you know, and just ended up pulling off. Probably ended up pulling off about 65 or 70 seats
from the floor.
Threw them all in truck, you know, made major truck trips and then cleaned them up and then brought them onto this series of risers that I built.
This
and
is your
mounted
own
them.
Late 80s montage. Where's the music? Right, where's right. the this yeah. is a movie.
Yeah. And we got the theater up and running and it was a proud moment. I was just me and Mark. Mark didn't have any building ability, but he was can do and he was there and we just show up at night and lock ourselves in the place because it was kind of dicey and put some butcher paper up in the front so people couldn't see us moving around in there. And yes, this was the theme.
Somebody's painting across. He accidentally paints your face and you wag your finger at him.
I went and There was a Little Caesars pizza in North Hollywood that did like the 2-for-1.
Sure, the hot and ready.
You know, and we just go for $7, get two big pizzas, and it was
cheers your slice.
It was I was working so hard and on my feet so much that I could never get fat, no matter how much pizza I ever ate. So it was always just pizza every single night for two, you know, for $7. And at the very end, when I got everything kind of situated, then the rest of the Acme people sort of wandered in and would help paint or like hang up a curtain right. for a dressing area or something like that. But we got it done. We made it nice. The layout was perfect. It was as much as I could do. And it's still there today. And I think, Chris, one of these days we're going to go over there and take some pictures of that place.
Same seats?
I imagine everything is still as it was. It's Stella Adler now or something. They changed the name of it. But
what those seats have seen.
Oh, boy.
Literally, the seats. Not man. People in them, but the seats.
Yeah. They've seen a million asses, and they've rocked them all. So now came time for us to put up our first review and our first theater, our own
exciting.
Theater. And it was going to be in the LA Weekly, which was a big deal because everyone would use the LA Weekly to open it up and figure out what movie to see, mm-hmm. what show to see, what comedy, what sketch, you know.
It was a little more underground, a little more hip.
Yeah, it was hip.
For people outside the area.
But everyone used the Weekly to figure out mm-hmm. what was hip and what was hot. And what was, you know, if there was a hot sushi place, then there'd mm-hmm. be a write-up in the Weekly, and then everyone would show up on that Friday. So that's what the Weekly did for us. So we had a reviewer from the LA Weekly. We knew they came out. And we called ourselves Acme so we could get to the top and be in the front of all the reviews of the LA Weekly. And by the way, you'd get reviewed by the LA Weekly, and then you would just enter their page after that. So if you did a show...
You mean the listings,
permanently. Yeah, you would do a show in January... And you might not do your next review until July, but whatever the review was from January, that would live in the LA Weekly every week for the next 6-7 months
right,
or
right.
whenever you got your shit together to do your next review. So was big
you
anticipation.
Keep saying review and review. You're talking about a review like of the show. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm using review actually both ways.
Right.
So you would review the show and you do a comedy review.
Gotcha.
But They came out, they reviewed us, and we did a good show. But amazingly enough for us, the biggest deal was having an audience. Because, you know, I've done a show for just Fred Willard. We just had Fred Willard. That's why it didn't strike me as that bizarre when he walked into the place he thought was a tiki bar,
right.
but it was a gay lounge
sure.
or something. It's like, oh, Fred Willard does walk down the street and turn into establishments and hang out. So... He would come in and hang out a little bit, and it would always be like a little buzz, like Fred Willard is out there somewhere. And famously, we did a show for, I think, just my grandparents once. Mm. And it was a frequent conversation. Like, we'd be backstage, and we'd go, the biggest bummer would always be like, I'd go like, I got three people coming tonight. Because nobody would just, there was no foot traffic.
Right. It's a bringer.
Everyone had to bring somebody.
Yeah.
It was a de facto bringer show.
Yeah.
It was a de facto bringer show. And so, like, I would go, like, I got three of my old friends from the Groundlings coming and, like, one guy from work. So I got four guys coming tonight. And then I'd look at the troupe and I'd go, Vanessa, did you got anyone? I don't got anyone. John, anyone? No. Paul? No one? Nobody. And I'd be like, and you could do the math real quick. Nobody brought anybody, so it's just my four friends here tonight.
Part of the gig to bring some audience members.
We would then have to decide. Like, we'd be backstage going, there's three people. Do we do a show? If there's two people, we're not going to do it. But there's four people, it's game on.
That
might be an encore. So we got three. Like, should we just scrub it? We would cancel shows, but... We figured out that the LA Weekly was coming, and everyone was like, we got to get our best laughers and our friends all out for this LA Weekly review. And the reviewer came out, and we had a good show and a fairly full crowd, and everyone felt pretty good that night.
You couldn't wait for the paper to drop.
After party, had a few beers, had a good time. Everyone celebrated that night. because we knew we did a good show. And we knew the weekly would review it, and we knew how important the weekly was, especially for us, because we didn't have any audience, and this is going to be our first review. And I think the paper came out on a Thursday, but maybe that's the maybe that was the recycler. Maybe everything came out on Thursday. But I remember going to get the LA mm-hmm. Weekly, and I remember reading it at my mom's house because I was back to finish her kitchen, at this point. So done building Acme, did our big show, had a good night, got the paper, went to my mom's house, worked on her kitchen, and just sat down and read this, my first review.
Now I'm going to treat myself to this review.
Never been reviewed before, any way, shape, or form, and here it is.
How are we driving? Call Two Roads. According to their press release, the Two Roads Players director, M.D. Sweeney, was aiming for something different from the improv group staple of hip, irreverent comedy. He got it.
Oh, boy.
This 11-sketch, 8-improv debut review is neither hip nor particularly irreverent. Okay. For a comedic form that has traditionally set its sights on satirically skewering cultural excesses and pretensions, Sweeney's bloodless conception is dead on arrival.
Oh my God.
Let's see where this goes.
Speaking of pretentious.
I was like, this is the only review I've ever had.
Part of the problem goes by the name of Warren Sorich, credited with writing 4 of the evening's more egregious misfires, but not one of the performers on stage.
Yeah, we had a guy who just wanted to write but didn't want to perform. We got to find out what happened to Warren, if he didn't kill himself after the review. Warren Sorich.
Yeah.
Scripted improv clicks only when sketch ideas and characters evolve from material honed in the workshop.
Oh, yeah.
Not at a typewriter. The show is not without its moments, usually those written and performed by Adam Carolla.
I was like, we're back!
From deep!
I was reading this review in my mom's house going, and she was like, what are you doing there? I got about halfway in. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to show this bitch any of this and confirm all her confirmation bias. And I was like, ooh, there I am.
Frame this shit.
Or John McCann.
That's John McCann was Skipper Ned Heem, who came up with that bit of the burial.
Carolla's coming attraction takes a nice swipe at the DMV via the horror movie trailer. McCann's Skipper Heem does the Neptune Society one better by offering sports fishing along with sea burials. The evening's finest moment is McCann and Carolla together as beer-swilling good old boys, Monday morning quarterbacking everything from last night's game to the finer points of high finance. The worst is Sweeney's failure to pull the plug on a final, torturously interminable improv.
Interminable!
In which audience-suggested moods are incorporated in a sketch that then reruns and reruns and reruns.
Yeah, so that was our review.
Is there more?
They spelled Carolla right all the way through.
Yeah. That's amazing. See, that was our review, but that wasn't your review. You should be on fucking cloud 9.
I had very mixed feelings about going to rehearsal that night.
Oh, I bet.
Knowing that everybody had been devastated. Hey, Warren, how's it going?
Wait, where's Warren?
I'm doing good. What are you talking about? Like, I had to go see all those people that were just decimated. Skewered. Except for then I got called out. Now, the thing that I understood about reviewers at that point. That's the one I understood. Because there's a line in there, Dawson, that's right above them getting to me part, where they give this little lecture on how one creates comedy sketches, where they go, Warren Sorich, that guy just wrote sketches. Real sketches and good sketches are honed in the workshop. Uh-huh. They're done, you know, with improvisation turn into a sketch. You can't do a sketch where a guy just writes a sketch and puts it up on stage. You read that, and then I'll tell you what happened.
Scripted improv clicks only when sketch ideas and characters evolve from material honed in the workshop.
Okay.
Not from a typewriter.
Right. Then, 7 lines later, they go on to say the best part of the night was Adam and John McCann doing a couple beer-swilling armchair quarterback. never in improv, never worked out in the workshop, nothing. I literally went to John McCann, who's a very good writer, and I said, I got an idea. What if we're just a couple of blue-collar dudes, and it's like after work, and we're on the construction site, we're just sitting around having a beer, and we're doing that thing where it's like, this guy came up to me, and it was like, I'll tell you what I would have done, that guy come up to me. I tell you, I would have looked him down the face, and it started off with that, and then it was like, oh, did you see the game last night? Jeez, they went for it on fourth. I'll tell you what I would have done. I would have sent the field goal team out there. And then it got into fashion, like she's wearing a flirty handful of chiffon. I'll tell you how I would address her. And it got into weird financing stuff, and it just got into outer space with the blue-collar guys going, I'll tell you what I would have done. And we got into what font we should have used and how to write a proper piece in the New York Times. And it was a funny bit. But
well,
the
obviously honed over the years.
The entire genesis of the bit is me thinking of this bit and then calling John and going, write it up. Here's what I got, write up. Never came up in the workshop, never thing. So he was dressing us down about how good sketches are born, and then goes on to cite one that was never born. It was just, I was just told to do it.
And doesn't SNL have the model of literally writing a sketch and performing it 4 days later?
Weekly.
Like, it's not honed over the years or whatever, workshopped. It's pretty much written. And
it's on his feet.
Yeah. Well, there it is, everybody.
Who is this reviewer?
He's coming in next.
This is Bill Radin.
Bill Radin. Well, we'll see what happened to Bill Radin, and we'll see if we can find out Warren Sorich's. I mean, he could have gone back to selling siding after this, but maybe he worked in the industry? I don't know.
See, I Googled his name. I don't know how many Warren Sorches there are, but there's one credit from 1982 where he was an extra in a movie. So it didn't catapult him into the stratosphere.
It is an interesting business in that you have no idea who would be successful and who would never be heard of again, because it's not really based so much on just raw talent. It's kind of like there's some luck and there's some getting in with, and there's an element, there's a who you know element to it. It's not just cut and dried. Right. So I don't think anybody in that troupe would have predicted any success for me. They would have went, oh yeah, Adam is a really funny guy who probably went back on the construction site.
I looked up Bill Radin. He was, it looks like he was still at the LA Weekly from until 2018.
Yeah, he's still around. Still around writing.
So he was able to devastate many more upstart
for
comedy
many years.
Warren Sorich, on the other hand, may have gone a different direction. Yeah. If there is one on Facebook, I don't know if it's him. Was he from the Bay Area? Do you have any idea?
May have been. I kind of remember what he looked like.
Warren
Sorich,
who went to San Jose High School. Is that him?
I can't remember. Look. The reality was, is
open
he.
Open your eyes.
Oh, yeah, I could kind of see that.
I think that guy had a mobile DJ service at one point.
Oh.
I don't, you know.
Chris, am I right about that?
I didn't hang out with him that much because he wasn't there that. We were always there working out and doing improv and stuff, and he was writing
literally
stuff.
Literally mailing it in.
Mailing it in to M.D. Sweeney. But the bloodless conception is dead on arrival.
Jesus
Christ. Yeah. I'll never forget those words.
Brutal.
All right. So, but turned out good for me. Let me tell you about fast-growing trees. Spring and summer, time to finally get outdoors. Get your place looking like a resort with fastgrowingtrees.com. Their experts curate thousands of plant varieties that'll thrive with your specific climate, location, and needs. That is so important. When you get the right plant for the right climate, it thrives. And if you don't, then it's like some sort of elderly patient that you're just trying to keep alive the entire time.
I've been on these guys' site. I'm kind of obsessed now with fastgrowingtrees.com. It's great. You'll put in like where you are, right, your zip code, and it'll tell you, oh, you're in zone 9, which means like LA is a zone 9. You're in desert climate, and you can sort the tree or plant. They have shrubs, plants, succulents, flowers, everything, hedges, and they're like, oh, these will thrive best in your zone.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it's all there on their website, fastgrowingtrees.com. And again, privacy, shade, aesthetic, it's all it's all on your side at Fast Growing Trees. Am I right, Dawson?
Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/Adam right now and you'll get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/Adam. fastgrowingtrees.com/Adam.
All right. We're going to do some trending topics next with Chris Maxipata. And we'll do that right after this. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
Maxipata, 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 oh, 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 Maxipata.
Rocky Maxipata.
Well, he stands no more than 5'3". This puffy-haired, horny, hungry Asian pygmy. Road trips with Corolla and sleeps in a drawer. Heard he's good with the ladies, Filipino man whore. Took a school bus trip all around the state. He got a big appetite, likes to clean his plate. His real name's Loxamana, but not to Adam. So we change that shit up, now we call him Maxipata.
Maxipata, Maxipata. Maxipata, Maxipata, Maxipata. Maxipata, Maxipata, Maxipata. Oh, 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 Maxipata.
Rock me, Maxipata.
Maxipata, Maxipata. Maxipata, Maxipata.
All right, so let's open it up with some trending topics about space. There's been a lot going on in space right now. First off, we heard what a black hole sounds like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, so NASA released some audio last week. Sound.
I thought you were talking about Whoopi Goldberg. Keep going.
No, we know what she sounds
like.
Oh,
yeah. I don't like it.
The actual
probably
sound of a black hole. Yeah.
The actual black hole.
Very similar. So NASA released it. It's a sound of a black hole from the center of the Perseus Galaxy Cluster.
Massive, they foleyed a black hole?
Yeah, massive space. Well, this is interesting. So it's 11 million light years across and located about 240 million light years away from us here at Earth. So what they did was they created the audible sound by recording the pressure waves that the black hole sent through the cluster's hot gas. And in the original form, the sound waves can't be heard by the human ear. So scientists extracted the sound waves and scaled them up 57 and 58 octaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot of octaves.
A lot of octaves. I think only Mariah Carey can hit that. So, Ben Hads, why don't you play, and we'll take a listen to what a black hole sounds like.
Gary Enchanted.
The movies didn't have it too wrong.
No,
no, this is 2001.
Yeah, exactly.
It's operatic.
It's kind of like what we thought it would be.
Yeah,
yeah, black holes. Gravity so strong, light, mass, anything cannot escape it.
Do you have information on how they physically did this? Like, obviously it's too far away to send something, but how they...
He told us.
I know, but I'm sorry. Like, where was the microphone? Or, you know what I mean? Where was the... What captured the sound?
They emulated the sound by analyzing the waves.
The pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Unsatisfying.
Oh.
Yeah, but it does raise a question. And, Chris, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but you know they say there is no sound in space. Well, maybe there is sound in space. It's just below the threshold of the human ear.
Yeah. We just can't hear it.
Right.
Well, they also say in space they can't hear you scream.
I heard
that's
that.
True.
And they also say the first to die were the lucky. The other thing, I don't know which one that was. That's
the Hills
that was
Have
Wally.
Eyes.
The Hills Have Eyes?
I'm almost positive. And then in space, that's Alien.
Alien I knew, but the First to Die is Lucky I thought was a zombie thing, but maybe it is the Hills
Brian,
Have Eyes.
Brian, who's this?
I trust Brian.
The last ones to starve will be the first ones to suffocate.
What? I don't know. What is it?
Interstellar.
Oh, I don't know that.
Very doom and gloom out there. Yeah.
The problem with the space is the numbers are like so vast that, you know, they always go, that star you see up there, that burnt out 10 million years ago. And
yeah.
You're just looking at it now. And they go, that black hole is the sun. You know how many Earths you could fit into that black hole?
12.
7 billion
oh my God.
Earths. And then at a certain point, you go, I want Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And then someone goes, yeah, it's good. And then yeah. we leave. And that's how life works yeah. with space.
What did Chris say? It's 11 million light years across?
Yeah.
That's if you're traveling at the speed of light. Yeah. It's taking 11 million right. years to traverse it.
I don't, so like the, I don't like the waffle fries, though.
Yeah.
I like crinkly fries.
Yeah,
but I don't
soggy.
They're like a hashtag.
Why aren't you comprehending this? We're about specks on a giant's head.
I'm going to get extra dipping sauce,
kind of sauce
this time.
Oh, and I want spicy. I want to try the spicy one.
Oh, I heard that's good.
Yeah, I heard that's really good. It has a little heat in
hopefully
it.
Hopefully not too spicy.
Does Chick-fil-A have, like, their own language?
Yeah, like, you could order off menu, you know, like In-N-Out.
You can't conceive the distance just for the next star, let alone the entire galaxy.
Oh, speaking of the next star,
you say animal style, will that anger them?
They
that won't make sense to them.
They don't do that there, but they know what you're talking about, so they'll probably put all that stuff on top of the waffle fries.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Take the hairs on your head and multiply it by 10 billion to the 6th power. That's how many stars there are in the sky.
You know what I like about Chick-fil-A is they say, my pleasure.
Yeah,
really nice.
Yeah, yeah,
every time they're trying to do that.
Yeah, they're really, really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just wait in your car, too.
All right, sorry, next door.
let's see. So, well, also, that picture that we just saw, that's the first picture of the black hole in our galaxy, the Milky Way.
How nice.
Yeah, so very, very blurry, but there it is.
So here's a stupid question, or I guess a stupid comment. So now we're all signed off that black holes are real. Like, I feel like black holes were treated like wormholes. Like, we weren't totally signed off on the fact that, like, there's a thing where nothing can exist.
Gee, God made those on the first day.
That's right. That was Monday.
I always believed they were real. The only thing I'm confused about is how many planets there are now. Because that seems like it's
our solar system. Could be eight, could be nine. I don't know.
Yeah. It's always one of those.
Well, sometimes Pluto.
And also, it's weird to think when you're talking about how vast space is, Adam, that, like, you think of our sun, the sun's going to burn out in a billion years or something. And just that bums me out.
Me too.
I'm going to be long, long gone. But it's weird to think that
makes me sad.
It's finite. Like, life on Earth is completely finite. Well, also, speaking of space, for the first time ever, or, I mean, second time ever, but the first time in like 50 years, they're going to have a hearing at Congress about UFOs.
Oh, yeah. There's discussion about it, real credible stuff that's coming out now. Which I've always found interesting. We have talked about on this show before, but I spent, you know, my entire youth with a lot of discussion about UFOs. There was, you know, grainy footage. There was all the Area 51 stuff. There was all those Leonard Nimoy narrates, you know, and all these weird, scary. There was all that stuff I shared with you guys. Sun Classics presents.
Right, we saw it.
Yeah, and it was crazy speculation.
Yeah.
Literally, who built the pyramids?
Right.
There's no way humans had this technology.
It must have been aliens.
Easter Island. Showing cave drawings of a stick figure with a round head.
Right.
Could that possibly be a helmet from an alien that is space from outer space? Absolutely obsessed with outer space and aliens. I mean, look at all the movies that have been made about it.
Yeah.
And then about 2 years ago, they started to actually get credible footage, cockpit footage, knowledgeable people were actually saying, you know, I know about this, or the Pentagon's aware of it, and all this shit, and we're like, yeah, all right, what else? Yeah. I'm going to Chick-fil-A. You guys want something? And it was like, what? I thought we were obsessed over this. We're obsessed my entire childhood, obsessed over UFOs. And then I realized we are so narcissistic now. What the fuck's that got to do with me?
Yeah.
I mean, what's further away from you than outer space? And when I was a kid, it really wasn't about you. It was like you staring up into the heavens going, what's possible?
Yeah.
Right. Now
Tomorrowland.
Now we're staring into a mirror and we're all buried in our phones and everyone's texting and tweeting and everything. And it's like, hey, we got no time for aliens. What's that got to do with me?
But what I would say to that is, hey, are you a narcissist? Do you like being a narcissist? Would you like to live the way you are instead of being enslaved by your new fucking alien overlord? Then maybe start caring.
Well, it hit the news. There was a lot of cockpit footage and a lot of highly trained military pilots going, I've never seen this before. This technology doesn't exist. You know, people do a thing where they go, well, maybe that's the Chinese testing out. And it's like, I've heard experts go, first off, we know what the Chinese are doing for the most part. We have a lot of satellites. We're kind of on the cutting edge of technology.
Right.
So if whatever it is their military is doing is 1,000 years past ours, we would know about it.
Right.
And by the way, if this is the Chinese, we're in fucking trouble. Yeah. Because
we should
they are making
aliens.
Aircraft that turns at 90 degrees and 1,000 Gs and hovers without any propellant and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
But I think we have...
Here's the big video that came out.
Wait, I'm going to look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots from the west. Look at that thing, dude.
They just got a lot of interesting footage.
It got buried by the COVID stuff, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And because this is on the heels of this meeting is on the heels of all of these videos. And Adam, you know, you were screaming for years about let me see the ages. Nobody was screaming about let me see these UFOs. It completely
those border guys on the horses whipped those Haitians with their reins. Look at that.
Like
that was mind blowing. Yeah. Although, by the way, you didn't hear about it, but that was all disproven and went away. So that never existed. But you hear a lot about it. Then when it goes away, you don't hear the part where they looked into it. And
the corrections never the same.
No, but that's who we are. We're obsessed with that. But our new alien overlords, not so much.
And do you know what else we're doing? Because, Chris, I don't know if you have this, but remember when we sent Across the Universe, the Beatles song, into space because we want them to hear that and be wooed by our siren song? Now we sent a picture of two naked people, a naked man and a woman, into space. Like, why are we taunting them? We will pray for a time before we met the – thank you, Dawson – before we met the UFOs. We will wish we were back to just fighting amongst ourselves.
They've mastered intergalactic travel. We don't want them here.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and then they bring that cookbook about serving man.
To serve man.
How to cook for humans.
That's
how to cook 40 humans.
F-O-U-R.
Well, I will say this. Movies, whether it be black holes, wasn't there a movie called The Black Hole?
Yes.
Great question.
Yeah, they've been kind of right about a lot of stuff that they've talked about that seemed pretty fantastical and stuff, you know?
And Sonny should watch Interstellar.
It's one of my favorite.
I have seen it.
Oh, we watch it a lot, actually.
I don't think so. They've been pretty spot on about a lot of it. So I hope they're not right about the aliens, because those movies don't turn out well.
Or what was the one where they all look like shrimp and they call them prawns?
Oh, District 9.
District 9.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
They're living among us in Joburg.
That's right.
Oh,
there's a black hole.
What year was the black hole?
1971.
A journey that begins where everything ends.
1979.
I was going to say, seemed a little early for that. 1979, the black hole. Was there anybody in that movie, Dawson? We've heard of?
Oh, my God. I saw it so many times when I was a kid. We'll load up the trailer.
All right.
Is Across the Universe the song that we want aliens to...
That's what I'm saying.
You.
Everyone's trying to be cute, and here we are. It's our own demise.
They don't speak English. So they're not going to know. We need something more melodic.
We should have sent out some Edgar Winter group.
Give them
like Frankenstein or something.
Or one of those good country songs where like, we'll put a boot in your ass and a gun up your neck, you know.
Colors don't run.
They interpret it as a threat. They bring all their military might.
Or we scare them off, Brian.
Or we just do an 87-minute fish jam band, and then they won't want to come.
We fucking bore them. Yeah. They fall asleep and crash their vehicle. We have the trailer to The Black Hole. I knew this was a movie. I don't think I ever saw it. We'll try to... Dawson will heat it up. Yeah. Toby Keith should make the song that we send in the
cosmos, where time and space converge. A place beyond man's vision, but not his reach.
That's what the black hole
is. It is the most mysterious and awesome point in the universe.
This is the same
thing. Whether here and now, maybe forever.
Max Schnell.
Maximilian Schnell.
And Tony Perkins. This is star-studded.
Yeah, Robert Forrester.
Unavoidable.
Joseph Bottoms.
Moving through space. Swallowing everything in its path. Radio waves. Yeah. Light.
Chris Borgnine.
To speak. Even planets and stars.
Alert. An ensemble cast.
Yeah. All right. We got it. Must have been, you know, you think about sort of easy acting for bad 70s action-y kind of movies. Like, you didn't have to emote that much. Like, you didn't have to have that scene where you force yourself to cry came undone in front of your mom or something. You just had to go, we got to get out of here now. And then you leave again, you know?
Yeah. Or, we've got company.
Occasionally, you do the, your ass is writing checks, it can't cash. And then you'd leave.
Yeah.
But like almost anyone could do that kind of acting. Like you needed the right look, the right mustache, the right uniform.
Mylar.
And at some point you'd go, I can't hold her much longer. And
she's bring it up.
Also, you didn't have to memorize like tons of dialogue or anything.
There's a soliloquy.
There's no nuance. It's just a picture of you holding the yoke of a spaceship going, I don't know much longer I can hold her.
She's about to blow.
Yeah, when you look at those guys from like those movies, that's about it for the acting.
Light lifting.
Yeah, some good panic.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do one more because Brendan is here.
All right. How do you feel about Chet Hanks? What do we know?
Chet Hayes?
I have feelings.
Chester Hayes?
Chet Hanks. So Tom Hanks' son, rapper, actor.
I like it when anybody's offspring goes south. But now to be sad, what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be one direction.
It's just a waste of my time.
if you take some guy like Jesse James from Monster Garage or whatever, he's all tatted and he's smoking and he's working on Harleys all day, and then he has a really like straight laced kid who is into gaming, video games or something like that. I'll take that.
Yeah, just the opposite.
You just got to be the opposite,
right? And some comedians are like, oh, my father's a judge or a senator or something like that.
Yeah, it's kinda cool. So I like the opposite.
Right.
So Tom Hanks is Tom Hanks.
This is perfect.
Chet's perfect because he's the opposite. Right.
And he's the first son between Tom and Rita, although Tom's third son, Colin Hanks, is his half-brother.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But so he got a lot of flack for a video posted when he was at the Golden Globes last year, where he spoke in a patois accent, a Jamaican.
Oh, for Jamaica.
Yeah, so here's a video of that.
Big up the whole island, massive. It's your boy Chetana, coming straight from the Golden Globes, you know what I'm saying? My father Tom Hanks presenting in a while, soon forward come. Big up, tune in.
Okay.
That's a pretty dead-on accent.
Somebody who chose patois for my senior thesis on accents and dialects, holy I got to tell you, that's fucking great.
Wow.
I don't know if it's allowed, but it's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... it sounded good to me too, but I don't have anything to compare it to.
You didn't do your senior thesis on patois?
No, I didn't see.
I read it, but I didn't hear the. I couldn't hear it. Well, yeah, that's him just being funny, right?
Yeah, and you know, just bringing a big energy to something. Well, you know, cultural appropriation is a thing, and a lot of
his
Twitter
people don't come from.
Agreed. Yeah, exactly. So he was on a show on Showtime called Z-Way, where he was getting interviewed about it, and here's her. Right before she brings it up, asking if he wants to apologize.
Are there any marginalized communities you want to apologize to? I don't know, maybe the patois community?
So he's thinking about it, mulling it over.
No, he says...
No.
I love this guy.
I don't feel like
now.
I've truly done anything offensive, so...
You don't see it as cultural appropriation. You see it as, like, a celebration of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like social justice warriors can, like, go kick rocks.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, she said it.
Yeah. Awkward silence, takes a sip.
She's a proud woman of color.
No comment. Got it.
No, I mean, I 100% agree. Social justice warriors can kick rocks.
Mm.
I love him.
She's being sarcastic.
She's being sarcastic. There are other clips of it where...
Hey, is she being sarcastic?
Like, in the sense that she's defending him. It's like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She didn't mean that.
There was even one where she's trying to go over patois phrases, and there's a disclaimer at the bottom where it says, like, please excuse me for my cultural appropriation. I'm trying to bait this guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, I love Chet Hanks.
Yeah.
I love this guy.
He's enjoyable.
Now, let me explain something. No one... will ever go to him and ask him for another apology. No. That's how you get yourself off the list. You basically have to treat these douchebags and cunts, they're not all douchebags,
to be fair,
who are up on their fucking high horse about everything that didn't exist. People make jokes, they do whatever. You basically treat these people like it's like going out to dinner with a group. And the first time you've ever been out to dinner with that group, but there'll be many more dinners. And then at some point they go to you, would you like to pay the bill? And then you go, fuck no, I'm flat fucking broke. It was all I could do to fucking Uber here. It was $9 to Uber here, and that was too fucking rich for me. I got a dad who doesn't have dental insurance. I got to fucking pay for his fucking dental insurance. I had to take a fourth roommate the other day in a one-bedroom apartment. Okay, oh, you do that? You can go out to dinner with these people 100 more times. No one ever look at you and go, have you changed your mind about picking up the check? Now, you may not be invited to dinner ever again, which is what may happen, but they will never ask for an apology because they're fucking weak-willed pussy hypocrites, and they keep going. If you apologize, they just keep going back. They will not ask him ever again for an apology. Good for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's very upset about it.
I know. I don't know. It just feels like it's all waning now. Like I'm less affected by people not apologizing. Like I used to just go, ooh, that's going to suck later. That's going to hurt him later. But now
it's over it.
Yeah, I'm just so over it. I'm jaded.
Well,
yeah.
It's the apology. First off, apologies work about as well as masks on a fucking airplane, and that they don't. If it worked, do it.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. It doesn't get you out of people apologize and then they get fired. That's how it works, or they get canceled or whatever. So if it was an effective modality to get yourself from the doghouse up to the penthouse or something, but I think people have figured out it doesn't work.
And it's kind of like admitting guilt too, right?
Well, of course.
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole idea. Yeah. So
who was the rapper, the Loveline guy? I keep saying Scooby in my
Shaggy?
Head. Shaggy. Didn't Shaggy have that?
Yeah, there was something with Shaggy.
Well, Shaggy was an American who rapped, you know, in a very, I imagine, similar dialect. What's it called? Pashmina?
Patois.
He did that, you know.
Wait, he's American?
Yeah. Well, he has a Jamaican.
But why did he rap that way if he's American?
Could be pending approval. I thought Shaggy was like a Marine.
Oh, shit.
That sounds familiar, too. But now we have to see if I have some vague recollection. I was thinking, I went, Moby?
I could be wrong.
And then I went, no, it's not Moby. And then I went, Scooby? And I was like, no. I was like, no. And then, yeah, Shaggy. I had this vague recollection of Shaggy sounding like Chet Hanks. Well, let's watch that one more time. I really enjoyed Chet Hanks not giving a fuck. This is whatever you guys... You know, a lot of people really like anime, and I don't understand it. I really like guys not apologizing.
Yeah.
That's my
satisfying thing. To you.
And because I love how smug the hosts are.
Yeah.
As if she even gave a fuck about this 10 minutes ago.
She tweeted this out, and it was complimented so much about how she handled it. But yeah, she was totally baiting him and trying to.
Yeah.
Well, they had him on.
All right, one more time.
Are there any marginalized communities you want to apologize to? I don't know. Maybe the Patois community?
All right, hold it for a second. First off, is every community marginalized? Like, I don't know, if you're Jamaican, are you just marginalized? Like, is everyone just marginalized?
I mean, compared to white people.
Well, but who's marginalizing them?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, here's what I'm saying. Like, Japan may be doing better than certain cities or countries in Europe, and the certain countries in Europe might be doing better than certain countries in the Middle East. But is Japan marginalizing Afghanistan? Or is just fucking Afghanistan, and Japan is Japan? Why do you have to be marginalized?
Well, I think that goes back to narcissism. It's only marginalized by in our little world or our little enclave. Yes.
So if you go into a Trader Joe's and you have a full shopping cart with $500 worth of high-end booze and jerky, is the guy who's in back stocking the shelves, is that a marginalized person? Did you marginalize them? I'm not signed off on the whole marginalizing. island nations.
Well, breaking news. Shaggy was born in Jamaica, came to the U.S. as a teenager, and did, in fact, enlist in the Marines.
So everyone is right. All right, let's listen to him not apologize to the marginalized community. So.
Mulling it over.
Nah. I don't feel like I've truly done anything offensive, so...
You don't see it as cultural appropriation. You see it as like a celebration of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like social justice warriors can like go kick rocks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No comment. Got it.
No, I mean, I 100% agree. Social justice warriors can kick rocks.
Yeah. I love Chet.
So,
told you I love that dude.
What would everyone's reaction in this room and out of this room be if he was on the red carpet and started going like, oh, Mamma Mia, so happy to see you at the red carpet. Like, would we have thoughts about that?
I think he'd be funny.
That?
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah, because we got Ferraris.
Right.
You know what I mean? And Mama Celeste.
Right.
Yeah, between me and Adam, we're 100%. Well, there's one Italian person, so we're fine with it.
Okay.
No, nobody'd give a fuck. They'd think it was funny. Yeah. Or like a French accent, yeah, sure. Right? Or German.
Yeah.
They can do all the German, whatever.
Western Europe is fine.
Yeah. You can do whatever you want. You'll be celebrated. What about the Swedish chef? I mean, you're celebrated.
That's right.
You just can't. Dude, what I'm saying is the real marginalizing takes place is when we can't talk about groups. We
have to Hurrigan Flurrigan.
We have to include them. This is what you do. It's like, look, if you're not making fun of your buddies, that guy ain't your buddy. He ain't your friend anymore. You want to be in that group. All right, let's bring it home.
Check out the Water Cooler Podcast.
I'm offended.
Well, there is Simply Safe. Amy is a chronic sleepwalker, and she lives near a four-lane highway. A few months ago, she was out sleepwalking, opened the front door, but Simply Safe. Their entry sensor caught her, rang a 95-decibel siren from the base station, woke her up, or she wandered into the streets. She says it saved her life, and I believe her. Great company, great products, peel and stick. You don't have to pull wires. You don't have to drill and crawl underneath the house or crawl up in the attic. Batteries last up to 10 years, and they're very small. The stuff is very sleek. Backed by the best 24/7 professional monitoring in the business, less than a buck a day, no long-term contracts. You try it, 60 days, a risk-free 60-day trial. Customize a perfect system for your home in just a few minutes. Go to simplysafe.com/am. Go there today. Get the free indoor security camera plus 20% off interactive monitoring at simplysafe.com. MMA heavyweight, comedic heavyweight, intellectual heavyweight, Brendan Schaub joins us in studio right after this.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.